ingade. Om sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahavirdyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Om. Good, welcome back. We'll continue our study of chapter 14. We might finish today, I'm not sure. We'll see how we go, but we'll recite the final part of the chapter. Starting with verse 19, repeat after me, please. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram, nanyam gunebhya yada drashtanu pasyati, yada drashtanu. Gunebhyascha param veti, gunebhyascha param madbhavam sodi gacchati, madbhavam sodi gat gunan hetan atityatrin, gunan hetan dehi deha samudbhavan, dehi deha janmamrityuchara dhukkair, janmamrityuchara vimukto mritam ashnute, vimukto mrit. Arjuna uvacha, karlingai sreen gunan hetan, karlingai sreen gunan atito bhavati prabho, atito bhavati kimachara katam chaitans, kimachara katam chai. Trin gunan ati vartate, trin gunan. Shri Bhagavan uvacha, Shri Bhagavan. Prakasham cha pravrittim cha, prakasham cha pravrittim. Moham heva cha pandava, moham heva. Nadveshti sampravrittani, nadveshti sampravrittani. Nani vrittani kankshati, nani vrittani udasinavarasino, udasinavara gunaryo na vichalyate, gunaryo na vichal gunavartanta hityevam, gunavartan yovatishtati nengate, yovatishtati samadukha sukha swastaha, samadukha sukha samaloshtashma kanchanaha, samaloshtashma tulya priya priyo dhiras, tulya priya priyo tulya nindatma samstutihi, tulya nindatma manapamana yos tulyas, manapamha tulyo mitrari pakshayo, tulyo nitari pak sarvarambha parityagi, sarvaram gunatita sahuchyate, gunatita mamcha yo vyavicharena, mamcha yo bhakti yogena sevate, bhakti yoge sagunan samatityaitan, sagunan sama brahma bhuyaya kalpate, brahma bhuya brahma nohi pratishtaham, brahma nohi pratish amritasyavya yasya cha, amritasyavya shashvatasya cha dharmasya, shashvatasya sukasyai kanti kasya cha, sukasyai kanti cha. And that is the final verse of the chapter. We may or may not get that far today, we'll see. We are, though, in the midst of what is arguably one of the most important passages in the Bhagavad Gita, dealing with the guna atita And to, by way of introduction, let's just remember the meaning of that term. The latter part of this, the first part of this chapter was talking about how the three gunas are manifest in a person's mind. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, remembering that the ancients understood the world not in terms of matter and energy. The ancients understood the world through the lens of the three gunas, the world that consists of Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. The first part of this chapter, first two-thirds of the chapter really, dealt with the three gunas, but not with regard to the world, dealt with the three gunas with regard to our minds. So the first two-thirds of the chapter was an analysis of the mind in terms of the manifestation of the three gunas. And as we discussed, it was a little bit like a psychology class dealing with how the three gunas are manifest in the mind. The latter part of the class, of the chapter, which we're in the midst of now, is a radical shift of perspective where instead of talking about the three gunas, we're talking about being atita, beyond the three gunas. Guna atita means beyond the three gunas. And again, three gunas means mind in terms of this chapter. So beyond the three gunas means beyond the mind, right? To transcend the mind. And that really is what we're discussing here. And many of you were present in a meditation session. We talked about it also in a meditation session. We'll talk about it much further in this class. To be beyond the mind means to be unaffected by the mind. What does it mean to be gunatita, to be beyond, to transcend the mind? Means not to be affected by the mind. We can say we are all beyond whatever is happening in Australia. Don't ask me why Australia. So whatever happens in Australia doesn't particularly affect you sitting here and now. So in that sense, you're beyond it. Whatever happens to this table doesn't affect you. Whatever happens to this chair doesn't affect you. Whatever happens to this body doesn't affect you. Whatever happens to your body might seem to affect you. It doesn't, for reasons we've discussed. But now, whatever happens to your mind truly doesn't affect you. How can that possibly be so? You are the observer of the mind. As the observer, you're separate from the mind. Whatever happens in the mind is known to you. That establishes you as the observer, as the witness. In Sanskrit, sakshi. Sakshi, awareful witness. Whatever you are the witness of, you're separate from that and fundamentally unaffected by that. I'm the observer of this table. I'm not affected by the table. I'm the observer of the chair. I'm not affected by the chair. I'm the observer of this body. Truly, I'm not affected by it. I'm the observer of my thoughts, my emotions, my perceptions. Truly, I'm not affected. However, it seems like we're affected. How does that take place? If you observe something, it shouldn't affect you. So I observe this chair. It shouldn't affect me. The chair has a broken leg. Okay, I don't have a broken leg. Chair, but here's what happens. It's my chair. How can my chair have a broken leg? It's my chair. That's where the problem comes. It's not my chair, it's a chair. It's not my body. But it's part of the world, part of the universe. What right do I have to say mine? In a practical sense, absolutely. I don't want to sound silly. We're talking about some very profound Vedantic teachings right now. So from the perspective of those very profound Vedantic teachings, this is not my body. Where's the minus? If you analyze the chair, can you tell me what part of this chair is Swami Taratmananda's? There's nothing in the chair that identifies it as belonging to Swamiji. In the same way, there's nothing in this body that makes it uniquely mine. In fact, this body is composed of elements, elements belong to the universe, right? This body is composed of elements. Elements don't belong to Taratmananda. Elements belong to the cosmos. Come from the cosmos, sustained by the cosmos, return to the cosmos. They're not mine. And we extend this, of course, to the mind. The mind, instead of being physical stuff, the mind is mental stuff. There's no my-ness associated with the mind. It seems to be mine. I'm reaching for my prop. Here we go. We used this in the last class. Whatever happens in our mind seems to affect us, just like this crystal seems to be orange. Orangeness belongs to the cloth. Orangeness does not belong to the crystal. In the same way, sadness, etc., belongs to your mind. The sadness does not belong to you, the awareful observer of whatever happens in the mind. Now, this is exactly where we're coming back to our text. We'll set the crystal aside and use a different metaphor for today's class. But let's return to the verses. Having finished this brief introduction, we resume with verse 23. Udasina vadasino, udasina vada. Gunaryo navichalyate, gunaryo navich, gunavartanta yatyevam, gunavartanta, yovatishtati nengate, yovatishtati neng. Udasinavat asinaha. Nice, really nice Sanskrit. Gunaihi yaha navichalyate. Yaha, the one who, na vichalyate, the one who is not disturbed, not pushed around. Not pushed around by what? Gunaihi, by the gunas. Remember, we're talking about the mind. So the one who is not pushed around by the mind means the one who is not affected by what's happening in your mind. So here's this very profound Vedantic wisdom talking about you as the consciousness, independent of the mind. You as a conscious observer of your thoughts, emotions, and perceptions. As a conscious observer, you are separate from the observed. The observed is not directly affected. The observer is not directly affected by the observed. We said it seems to be so, but it's not so. Whatever happens to this chair doesn't happen to me, the observer. Whatever happens to this body doesn't happen to me, the observer. Whatever happens to my mind doesn't happen to me, the observer of the mind. Therefore, Yaha, the one who knows this, Navichalyate, who is not disturbed in any way whatsoever, Gunaihi, by the gunas, by the nature of the mind, by the constantly changing nature of the mind. What about that person? That person, udasinavat asinaha. That person is as though asinaha literally means seated, but as though seated. That vat means as though. That person is as though asinaha, seated, udasinavat. Some of you know this word, udasin, they'll say often in North India. It's often used as a term of respect for a sannyasi. What it refers to is one who is detached. Udasina means completely detached. What is the word I'm looking for? Detached. I can't. There are other words. The sense that you're not involved, you're not connected, you're not affected by anything. Udasinavat. The one who, asinaha, remains seated, udasinavat, as though utterly detached. Asinaha, seated with detachment. What does that mean? I'm seated, you're seated, but right now we're engaged. I'm engaged in the activity of teaching. you're engaged in the activity of listening. So we are not udasinavat. There's the word I'm looking for, disinterested. Udasinavat. Asinaha, seated. Udasinavat. Suppose you're seated, disinterested. Occasionally I see someone, you can tell. It's pretty obvious, they're just kind of... Or worse, the phone comes out. Then I know. Anyway. Suppose you were asinaha, seated, udasinavat, disinterested, not engaged. Now the point is not to be disinterested, the point is to be detached. If you're detached, whatever happens here won't affect you. By the way, that goes for the person who's not involved. Whatever I say doesn't go in, right? So in the same way, if you are detached, and here we're talking about the mind, if you are detached from the mind, whatever happens to the mind doesn't affect you. And I don't know how to tell you what kind of amazing freedom comes with that discovery. Just as you can imagine, whatever happens to your body, if you have some freedom with regard to the body, and many of you do, many of you have dealt with the body, you're reconciled with death, and whatever happens to the body, what can I do? It's not in my hands, it's in Ishvara's hands, and you're ready to die. And what a healthy attitude that is, as opposed to someone who is so completely identified with the body. If you're completely identified with the body, that body is going to be a constant source of anxiety and misery, will it not? Absolutely. If with regard to your body, if you are udasinaha, detached, it doesn't mean detached, but it literally means disinterested, udasina, but in our present context, let us translate it as detached. That's really the sense of it. With regard to your body, if you are detached, you won't worry so much. You will enjoy freedom when your body is afflicted. In the same way, if you are detached with reference to your mind, which is possible, we'll talk about how in just a moment, if you get that same detachment from your mind, what incredible freedom. Because, there's no way in the world we can protect our bodies from all forms of illness and old age and death. We can't. We know that. In the same way, there's no way, we've had this discussion before, I won't do it elaborately now, but just to recall, there's nothing we can do to prevent our minds from all the troubles of life. Bad things happen to us. Those bad things can affect our bodies. Those bad things will affect our minds. That's life. Even if you run away and sit in a cave, bad things will happen to you. In fact, little insects will come and nibble at you, and you won't get food, and you won't be able to sleep. What can we do? Life includes suffering. I didn't say life is only suffering, but life includes suffering. The suffering affects our bodies, suffering affects our minds. If you're detached from your body, you're free from suffering with regard to your body. If you're detached from your mind, then you enjoy freedom in spite of the ups and downs that your mind undergoes. Now, this is a little abstract, so let's try to make it more concrete. In the last class, I gave a very elaborate metaphor using the crystal. One of our students came up to me after the class and said, Swami, that's really heavy. That's a little hard to understand. Definitely it is. The crystal, however, is one of the classical metaphors, drishtantas, one of the most important drishtantas given in the tradition of Vedanta is that of the crystal. So I used it elaborately. Let me use another metaphor today that will be, I think, much more accessible. So the metaphor of the crystal is to show how the crystal appears to undergo change when it really doesn't. So let me use a modern metaphor. We used this in the meditation session. This is a metaphor that if rishis lived today, if our Upanishads and scriptures were being written today, they would definitely have used this metaphor. Because it's such a powerful and easy to use and clear metaphor. The metaphor, as we used in the meditation session, is that of a movie. If you're watching a movie, whatever happens in the movie, does it affect you? Well, if it's a really sad movie, you probably feel sad while you're watching it. If it's a really funny movie, you probably laugh. So the movie affects you. Does it really affect you? If somebody dies in the movie, how does that affect your life? If one of your family members die, that affects you tremendously. But if somebody dies in the movie, it really doesn't affect you. So the idea of a movie is it seems to affect us, but it really doesn't. It seems to affect us because we get caught up in the plot. We get identified with the characters. We get drawn in to the movie. You know what I mean. So when we're drawn into the movie, we are identified with whatever is happening in the movie. Just as if you're identified with a chair, what happens in the chair affects you. If it's my chair. If you're identified with the body, whatever happens to the body will affect me. If I'm identified with the mind, etc. Well, if you're identified with the movie, if you're identified with the characters and the plot, if you're drawn in to the movie, the American English is if you're sucked in. Very vivid. If you're sucked into the movie, you're enmeshed in that movie so that whatever happens in the movie will seem to affect you without truly affecting you. You know it doesn't, right? Of course it doesn't. In fact, and this is the joke I told in the meditation session, if you weren't there, I'll just say it briefly, and that is if I were sitting there in a movie theater next to you, I would tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, this is only a movie. Do you see it's a screen? Do you see the edge of the screen? Do you see the black border on the edge of the screen? Do you see these different colors of light being projected on the screen? Oh, yeah. The moment you recognize that it's a screen on which all kinds of images are projected, that recognition leads to detachment. You can't be identified with the movie if you are watching a screen on which light is projected. You get identified when you forget there's a screen, when you forget there's images projected, when you get identified. Isn't it interesting that in order to enjoy a movie, it depends on ignorance? True, right? You have to forget. There are many things. First of all, you have to forget you're looking at a screen, etc. Second thing you have to forget is you're watching a bunch of overpaid actors running around on a set someplace in Hollywood or Mumbai, which is a fact. You know, overpaid actors running around on a set. But with the help of ignorance, we forget all of that. And therefore, we are drawn into the movie. We get identified with it. In the case of a movie, it's harmless. In the case of life, the same kind of ignorance affects us with much worse consequences. Ignorance allows you to be drawn into the movie, to get identified with it, but no negative consequences. Ignorance causes us to get identified with the body and mind. That ignorance has tremendous negative consequences. Suffering. That's why we suffer. We don't suffer because of the movie, because the movie comes to an end. You know, if it's a really sad movie, you're crying and crying and crying and crying. Eventually the movie comes to an end. And you may cry for one or two more minutes more after the movie is over. usually happens. But but eventually you stop crying. In life, when does the movie end? The movie does end. But you're going to cry until the movie ends. You're going to cry until you die? What kind of metaphor for life is that? That is the consequence of ignorance. Due to ignorance, we identify with our bodies and minds. Due to that identification, our bodies and minds become the source of so much suffering. With knowledge, the kind of knowledge that leads to a healthy detachment. What is a healthy detachment? To know that whatever happens to the chair, I'm okay. Whatever happens to this body, I'm okay. Whatever happens in this mind, I'm okay. With that healthy detachment, we are freed from so much suffering. That's what Sri Krishna is describing here. Udasinavat asinaha. Asinaha. Literally seated. As though you're seated in a movie theater. It's almost like Sri Krishna anticipated this movie theater metaphor. Asina, as though seated, but as though seated, udasina vat, with disinterest. So as though I'm sitting with you in a movie theater, tapping you on the shoulder, reminding you again and again, it's only a movie, it's only a movie, it's only a movie. That's what it is. Udasinavat asinaha. Then gunaihi na vichalyate. Then that one is not affected. In a movie theater, you won't be affected by what happens in the plot. If I'm constantly reminding you, it's only a movie. And in real life, when you know that whatever happens to your mind doesn't affect you, with this knowledge, Navichalyate, you won't be adversely affected by whatever happens in your mind. What is that knowledge? Gunaha vartante iti evam. Evam thus, knowing what? Gunaha vartante. You have to break the undo the grammatical changes due to sandhi. Gunaha vartante. Gunaha, the three gunas, vartante. They take place. The gunas undergo their own transformations. They unfold. They, in American English, they do their own thing, so to speak. Which means what? Gunaha refers to your mind, remember? Gunaha vartante, loosely translated, means your mind is going to do its own thing. Natural, right? Your mind is. Nature behaves naturally. A tree grows. A tree has broken limbs. A tree falls over and dies. Nature, right? A body is born. A body grows. A body undergoes different kinds of illness. Old age, a body dies. Natural? Absolutely. Minds are subject to agitation, anger, frustration, irritation, sadness. You're also subject to all the good things in life, but we don't worry about the good things. We only worry about the bad things, so we'll focus on that. Minds are subject to sadness. Is that natural or unnatural? Absolutely natural. If we can't do anything about the natural state of the body aging and preparing for death, in the same way, what can we do for a mind that's subject to sadness? Naturally, minds will be subject to sadness. When a tree dies, should we cry? Or should we acknowledge that it's natural? When a loved one dies, I know we cry, but it's still natural, right? It's absolutely natural. The tree dies, natural. The body dies, natural. The mind is subject to sadness, agitation, etc., natural. We can't do anything about nature. We can do something about how we understand nature. If we understand whatever happens to nature, it doesn't happen to me. The tree dies, I'm okay anyway. The body dies, I'm okay anyway. My mind is agitated and sad, I'm okay in spite of that. This is what Sri Krishna is describing here. Gunaha vartante iti evam. Understanding thus. Understanding what? That the mind is doing what it is programmed to do. Programmed by nature. What can we do for that? We can't prevent old age and death. We can't prevent sadness and agitation. We can treat the body the best we can to improve its condition. In the same way, we can do different things to improve the qualities of our mind, but no matter what, we can't prevent the body from undergoing old age and death. In the same way, we can't prevent our minds from experiencing sadness, agitation, etc. But we can know that we're okay no matter what. And that's a very casual way of speaking, but I feel it so accurately represents what this Vedantic wisdom leads to. It leads to a certainty that whatever happens out there in the world, you're okay. Whatever happens to your body, you're okay. Whatever happens to your mind, you're okay. Very simple way of saying it, but I think a very accurate way. Yaha avatishtate, that person avatishtate remains. That person remains how? Na ingate. That person remains without ingana is actually, we usually talk about a flame wavering, ingana. Na ingate. The person doesn't waver. Avatishtate, with this wisdom you remain. Na ingate, without wavering, without being blown about by the winds of life, without being affected by the plot in the movie. You can detach from the plot of the movie, you won't be affected. In the same way here, we're talking about detaching ultimately from the mind. With this healthy kind of detachment in the mind, you know you are okay no matter what. Very, very important teaching. Okay, so with this knowledge, your perspective on life is dramatically changed. Just like in a movie theater, one moment you're watching the movie, say the movie is taking place, where did we say before? Australia. Don't know why Australia, I don't know. So the movie is taking place in Australia. You're watching the movie, so where do you feel yourself to be? Australia. They're all speaking English with the funny accent. You know that accent. Okay. You, while you're watching the movie and identified with the movie and hearing everyone talk with that Australian accent, you feel yourself to be in Australia until I tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you're in this movie theater in New Jersey. Radical shift of perspective that takes place due to detachment, disidentification. Here we're talking about a radical shift of perspective that takes place due to detachment with reference to our minds. What is that shift of perspective? We see that in the next two verses. Samadukha sukha swastaha, samadukha sukha swastaha. Samaloshtashma kanchanaha, samaloshtashma tulya priya priyo dhiras, tulya priya priyo, tulya nindatma samstutihi, tulya nindatma. With this detachment from the mind, one becomes sama dukkha sukha. One becomes sama, the same, towards dukkha and sukha. So if the movie is a comedy, you laugh. If the movie is a tragedy, you cry. If I'm sitting next to you in a theater reminding you that it is just a movie, you neither laugh nor cry, because it's just a bunch of light projected on a screen. Sama, dukkha, sukha. This is the detachment from the mind that Sri Krishna is describing. With this kind of healthy detachment from the mind, whatever, it doesn't mean sukha and dukkha are absent. You know, the happy scene is still on the screen. The sad scene is still on the screen. You, the one in the theater, are unchanged. So let me make this clear. Are we saying that an enlightened person never experiences happiness and sadness? You tell the enlightened person, your mother just died. The enlightened person says, oh. Huh? You tell the enlightened person, you just won $100 million lottery. Oh, is that so? No, absolutely not. The sukha and dukkha still take place on the screen of the mind. Happiness and sadness are still present in the mind, even in the mind of an enlightened person. Then what does it mean to be sama dukkha sukha? The same towards sama dukkha means the enlightened person, if the mind is full of happiness, okay. If the mind is full of sadness, okay. That's what we're talking about. To have that kind of detachment from the mind, whatever happens on the movie screen, okay. If it's happy, okay. If it's sad, it's okay. Whatever happens on the screen of the mind, if it's happy, okay. If it's sad, it's okay. Sama, dukkha, sukha, swastaha. Established in oneself means you're the one sitting in the seat of the theater. You are not lost in Australia being drawn into the plot. Swastaha, established in oneself. Sama, loshta, ashma, kanchanaha. This is a very typical Sanskrit expression. The one who is sama, the same, means having equanimity. The one who treats the same, treats what the same? Loshta. Loshta is a clod of earth, dirt. Ashma, stone. Kanchana. But interesting, they're all minerals. Dirt is a mineral, made of minerals. Stone, made of minerals. Kanchana is gold. Mineral, right? They're all minerals. Diamonds also, minerals. So they're all... Do you differentiate ever between these minerals? Gold and diamond usually end in a different category than dirt and stone. Not for this one. This enlightened person, sama, loshta, ashma, kanchanaha. Why the same? Tell me, if there are a lot of gold and diamonds in the movie, how does that affect you? Or if it's all dirt and mud, how does it affect you? You, the one seated in the theater. In the same way, you, the conscious observer, you, Satchidananda Atma, are not improved by having lots of gold and diamonds, nor are you sullied by dirt and mud. That's the idea. Sama loshta ashma kanchanaha. Tulya priya apriyaha. There are some people in life who are priyaha. We love them. We're fond of them. There are other people in life who are apriyaha. In American English, we call them pains in the neck. So the world seems to have an assortment of both, people who are priya and people who are apriya. The one who is sama, tulya. Tulya means sama, same. Tulya, equal. The one who is the same towards people who are loved, or people who are pains in the neck, the one who doesn't react, the one who doesn't have to run after the ones who are loved or run away from the ones who make you miserable. This is the inner freedom that Sri Krishna is teaching us here through this healthy detachment from the mind, becoming guna atita, beyond the gunas, you gain this inner freedom. Tulya priya, 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 apriyaha. This one who is dhiraha, obviously, dhiraha, intelligent, enlightened. Dhira means intelligent. In this context, the enlightened one. The enlightened one, because only an enlightened one displays these qualities. These are the qualities of an enlightened person. A person who is tulya, ninda, atmastutihi. The person who is tulya, the same, towards ninda, someone is cursing you, or atma samstuti, someone is praising you. Here atma just means person, self. Atma samstuti, praise of a person, ninda, cursing the person, deriding the person who's tulya, the same towards both. If somebody is praised in a movie or cursed in a movie, you're sitting in the theater. What difference does it make? In the same way, just to make this very real, if you're really enlightened and someone, let me just give an anecdote. I've told this long ago. Some of you will remember this story. When I was manager of Varsha Vidya Gurukulam, occasionally, and in retrospect, I don't think I was a very skillful manager. I did things which irritated some of the residents. So if I did something that would irritate a resident, you can be very sure that that resident would come into my office and sometimes curse me out. That happened. I wasn't a sannyasi in those days, so they felt free. Now there's some protection, hopefully. I don't know. Although not necessarily, in general. Okay. Anyway, I had no protection. They'd come into my office and curse me out. And I took Pujya Swami Dayananda's advice in this, and he helped me apply some Vedanta to this situation, so that I learned if someone came into my office and cursed me out, I knew they weren't angry at me. They were angry at the manager. And they probably had a good reason to be angry at the manager. Okay, what can I do? They're angry at the manager. And similarly, if someone were to come into my office and praise me, I don't think that ever happened. I don't think so. But if it did happen, I would have remembered, oh, they're not praising me, they're praising the manager. This is real. You get it. You can get it. You can understand this idea of being immune to praise and blame is not some kind of ideal. It's something you can achieve. It's something you can become that. These teachings of Vedanta are more than adequate. If these teachings of Vedanta could help me deal with that manager situation, then they can help anyone, absolutely. Okay. This same idea is continued in the next verse. Manapamanayos tulyas, manapamanayos tulyo mitrari pakshayoho, tulyo mitrari pakshayoho, sarvarhamba paratyagi, sarvarhamba paratyagi, gunatita sahuchyate, gunatita sahuchyate, manapamanayoho tulyaha. Same idea, tulyaha, the one who is the same, towards mana, respect, and apamana, disregard. Tulyaha, the same, having equanimity, towards mana, respect, and apamana, disrespect. The one who is tulyaha, the same, towards mitra, ari, pakshayoho. Mitra paksha are those who are on your side. They're friends, mitra paksha. Then there is ari paksha, those who are on the other side, the side of the enemy. Those who are on your side are friends. Those who are on the other side are so-called enemies. The one who is tulyaha, the same towards both. Because they're all characters in a silly movie. The characters in a silly movie, how do they really affect you? If you know, if someone has tapped you on the shoulder and reminded you, hey, It's only a movie. Don't take it so seriously with this understanding. Tulyaha, the same. Finally, Sarva Arambha Parityagi. Tyagi is a renunciate, one who has renounced. Parityagi, one who has completely renounced. Completely renounced what? Sarva Arambha. Arambha here means undertaking, that which you begin, something that you begin, some undertaking. Sarva Arambha, all undertakings, Parityagi, completely renouncing all undertakings. An enlightened person. An enlightened person doesn't do anything. What he says? How do we understand that? An enlightened person doesn't do anything. I don't know how else to express this, but in a manner of speaking, I could say that I did not come into this lecture hall and I am not teaching. Why? Because the activity of coming into this lecture hall is an activity that takes place because of the mind, and the act of teaching is an activity that takes place in the mind. I can truly say that right now I'm not teaching. Right now I'm not talking. Obviously, I'm not talking about Swami Taratmananda, because Swami Taratmananda is talking. Swami Taratmananda is teaching. When I say I'm talking not about Swami Taratmananda, I'm talking about consciousness. The consciousness, which is my essential nature, doesn't do a thing. That's true for you. That's as true for each of you as it is true for me. Whether it's understood or not, it's as true for you as it's true for me. Actions do take place for an enlightened person or unenlightened person. But what is the difference? For the enlightened person, the activities are initiated in the mind and not by oneself. Oneself being Satchidananda Atma. That's what it means. Sarva Arambha Parityagi. Completely renouncing all undertakings means recognizing that you are the unchanging conscious observer of all mental activities, including those mental activities that initiate actions. Actions continue to be initiated. Actions are initiated by mental activities. Who are you? The unchanging, uninvolved observer of all those mental activities. This is the condition of one who is guna atita, which is exactly what Sri Krishna says, guna atita saha uchyate. Saha uchyate, that person uchyate is called what? Guna atita, beyond the three gunas. What a beautiful, beautiful description of that condition of enlightenment. So here, being enlightened is referred to with the expression guna atita, transcending the gunas, transcending the mind. Leads us to the closing verses of the chapter. Mam cha yovyabhicharena, mam cha yovyabhicharena. Bhakti yogena sevate, bhakti yogena sagunan samatityaitan, sagunan samatit brahma bhuyaya kalpate, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Good. Yaha, one who bhakti yogena, with bhakti yoga, with devotion, avyabhicharena, unwavering, avyabhicharena, bhakti yogena, one who with unwavering devotion, sevate, temporarily we'll translate it as worship, we'll redefine it in a moment, one who sevate worships, one who worships mam, me, one who with unwavering devotion worships me. Does it seem a little out of context? It should. It certainly looks like it on the surface to me, It should look, it's a shift of language. First of all, using the term bhakti yoga here in chapter 14 is a little surprising. And mam sevate, worshipping me, you would expect Sri Krishna to say something like that back in chapter 12, bhakti yoga. You wouldn't exactly expect him to say that in chapter 14, guna traya vibhaga yoga, the chapter dealing with the vibhaga, the division of the three gunas. So it seems a little odd, it seems a little out of place. Well, two things. One is, verses can sometimes get out of place because these scriptures have been passed down from before the Mahabharata was recorded. It was passed down in an oral form, in various oral forms, for many years. And it's possible for verses to get jumbled. That's one thing that happens sometimes in the Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures. That is, sometimes verse orders do get jumbled. In this case, a verse order is not jumbled. This verse belongs here in spite of the fact that it sounds odd. How can we make this verse fit in? Well, Sri Krishna says, one who sevate worships mam, me. When Sri Krishna says me, what comes to mind? Various things. You might be thinking of Sri Krishna with Arjuna in a chariot. Sri Krishna's the charioteer, or the famous picture where Sri Krishna's, he's holding the reins. Very nice picture. So he's holding the reins in one hand, his other hand is like this. He's giving Arjuna the spiritual instruction. Or when Sri Krishna says me, you might think of Sri Krishna like on an altar standing, as a form for the sake of worship. You may think of Sri Krishna in so many forms, Bala Krishna as a child, etc., etc. But here, when Sri Krishna says me, maybe we need some help. Maybe we need to look at a commentary, Sri Shankara's commentary, where he says, mam cha ishwaram. One, Sri Krishna says, one who worships me, who worships Ishwara, Narayanam, who worships Narayana, who worships the one who is sarva-bhuta hridaya-ashritam. There's our key. Hridaya-ashritam. Ashrita, abiding. Abiding in the hridaya, in the heart. In the hearts of sarva-bhuta, of all beings. Sarva bhuta hridaya ashritam ishwaram narayanam. The one who worships me, Narayana, Ishvara, the one who abides in the hearts of all. Now, hridaya, heart, is a metaphor. It doesn't refer to the physical organ, heart, you know that very well. The word hridaya almost always refers to mind. Did you know that? Hridaya, in a technical sense, so translated as buddhi, intellect, but in a very general sense, hridaya means mind. The one who abides in the mind of all. Shankara says here that Ishvara abides in your mind. Narayana abides in your mind. Krishna abides in your mind. In what sense does Ishvara abide in your mind? How does Krishna abide in your mind? You can answer that question. As that consciousness which is beyond the mind. As a consciousness by which all mental activities are known. As that Satchidananda Atma, as that which is called the divinity, the inner divinity, that which we loosely call the inner divinity means what? The consciousness by which all your mental events are known, that consciousness being the Sakshi, the witness, the observer, that Sakshi being the one who is Guna Atita. What have we been talking about in the last part of this chapter? So Sri Krishna is talking about that one only. that one who is guna atita, that consciousness which is independent of the mind, that consciousness which transcends the mind. Now he says, yaha avibha, yaha, the one who, avyabhicharena bhakti yogena, the one who with unwavering devotion, sevate mam, worships me. Now, are you going to, Shankara also talks about that, right? Bhakti yogena bhajanam bhakti hi saeva yogaha bhakti. Sevate. No, he doesn't explain. Okay. What does it mean to, if you take sevate as worship, and I know it's these translations I do rather hurriedly, so don't take these translations as the final word. The final word is what we're discussing now in these classes. This is like a rough translation, we'll call it that. What does it mean to worship God's presence within you? Which is basically what he says here. So with unwavering devotion, to worship God's presence within you. Does that mean, and just to be silly about it, it means instead of going to the temple and offering flowers, you can take those flowers and start putting them on your own head because you're worshiping God's presence within you. Instead of offering Abhisheka here, well, you've already had your morning Abhisheka. It's called shower. So you have... This verb sevate can mean worship. It also means to resort. So here, avyabhicharena bhakti yogena, with real devotion, with real intensity, with real fervor, sevate, to resort to what? Mam. Sri Krishna's presence in you as that consciousness, which is guna atita, the consciousness by which all your minds are known. There's a very nice expression that's commonly used. God dwells in you as you. God dwells in you as you. It's tricky because those two yous are different. God dwells in you, the individual person, as you, as the true self, as that consciousness. And that's really what Sri Krishna is teaching us here. Yaha, one who, avyabhicharena bhakti yogena, with firm, intense desire, one who sevate, resorts to mam, me, God's presence within as that consciousness, saha, that person, sam atitya, completely transcending what? Etan gunan. We have to reassemble the words here a little bit. Saha, that person who seeks me as that consciousness within with intense devotion, saha, that person, samatitya, completely transcending etan gunan, these three gunas. What about that person? Brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Kalpate, that person becomes fit for Brahma bhuyaya, literally means becoming Brahman. It's a metaphor. It's used in many texts. It means becomes fit for moksha, becomes fit for gaining enlightenment. That person is ready for enlightenment, that one who is devoted to discovering the truth of oneself as consciousness, Satchidananda Atma. All right. Leading us to the final verse of chapter 14. Brahmano hi pratishtaham, brahmano hi pratishtaham. Amritasya vyayasya cha, amritasya vyaya, shashvatasya cha dharmasya, shashvatasya cha dhar, sukasya ekantikasya cha, sukasya ekantikasya cha. Big statement. Brahmanaha hi pratishtha aham. Sri Krishna says, Aham, I am the Pratishtha. Pratishtha, in this context, foundation. Yeah, foundation, good. I'm never sure what about it. I just mentioned that when we're preparing for each chapter, what I do is I sit down with the slides. The slides are prepared with no translation. Volunteers prepared the slides, leaving the translation out. Then I go through and I fill in the translation. And I go fairly fast, and sometimes I don't do the best job possible. Anyway, this one is okay. I am the foundation, Pratishtha. Foundation for what? Brahmanaha. Foundation for Brahman? What in the world? Here we need some help of a commentary. Shankara actually gives two different interpretations, the second of which is Brahmanaha means Ishwarasya, Ishwara. Sri Krishna then says, I am the foundation for Ishwara. Who is Ishwara? Creator, sustainer, destroyer. The creator, sustainer, destroyer of the world is a conscious being or not? Silly, right? Ishwara, who is the creator, sustainer, destroyer of the cosmos, is a conscious being. Sri Krishna says, I am that consciousness. Just as Sri Krishna says, I am your consciousness. Sri Krishna says, I am the consciousness of the individual being. He says, I am the consciousness of each and every individual being. In the same way, Sri Krishna says, I am the consciousness of the great being, the universal being. I am the consciousness of Ishvara. He says, I am that consciousness. Shankara says, Pratyagatma, the inner self, the inner consciousness. So, Pratishta, Aham, I am the foundation. I am that inner consciousness, Brahmanaha, of Ishvara. Ishvara, who is Amritasya, Ishvara, who is Amrita, unborn, immortal. Ishvara, who is Avyaya, Ishvara, who is unchanging. Ishvara, who is Shashvata, eternal. Ishvara, who is Dharma, the Dharma embodied. Dharma in the sense of the order of the universe, the intelligence of the universe. Ishvara, who is Aikantika Sukha, absolute happiness. Aikantika Sukha. Ishvara, who is immortal, who is unchanging, who is eternal, who is the order of the universe, who is the source of absolute happiness. Sri Krishna says, for that Ishvara, I am the foundation. I am the consciousness. Prior verses, Sri Krishna is saying, I am the consciousness of each individual being, guna, atita. And now he's saying, I am even the consciousness of that Ishvara, the creator, sustainer, destroyer. By the way, this verse actually introduces the whole next chapter. The next chapter goes into that. What is the relationship between this pure consciousness, Ishvara, and nature? That's really the subject matter of the next chapter, the 15th chapter. Okay, let's finish up our study of chapter 14. Repeat after me. Om Tat Sat, Om Tat Sat, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishad Su, Upanishad Brahmavidyayam, Brahmavid Yoga Shastre, Yoga Shastre. Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogo Nama, Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogo Nama, Chaturdashodhyayaha, Chaturdashodhyayaha. This is a closing passage. It ends Om Tat Sat, Om, that is the truth, Iti, thus. Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su, in this blessed Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad Su, which contains the teachings of the Upanishads, Brahmavidyayam, amidst these teachings of Brahmavidya, knowledge of reality, Yoga Shastre, amidst these teachings of yoga, spiritual practice, Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, in the midst of this samvada, dialogue between Shri Krishna and Arjuna, this is the chapter called Guna Traya Vibhaga. The nama, the name of this chapter, is Guna Traya Vibhaga, the division of the three gunas, and it is the Chatur Dashaha, the 14th Adhyayaha, the 14th chapter. And to conclude, we remember that English version? It'll take us 2 minutes. Let us do that just so we get the overview of the whole chapter, just to remind us what we've studied. First verse, you can listen and repeat, then we'll chant together. The Blessed Lord said, the Blessed Lord, again I shall declare to you, again I shall, the highest knowledge ultimate, the highest knowledge, knowing which all the sages reached, knowing which all the goal supreme from bondage freed, the goal supreme from bondage. We'll chant together. Join me, please. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, these three are qualities from nature born. They all bind the eternal self to the body, this finite form. Sattva, free from impurity, shines so perfect and flawlessly, yet it binds by attaching one to both knowledge and happiness. Rajas, passionate tendencies, born of craving and clinging love, binds every soul embodied here through attachment to selfish works. Tamas, rising from ignorance, causes delusion for mankind. It binds one by attachment to negligence, sleep, and lethargy. Each of these three can dominate if stronger than the other two. When sattva rises prevalent, the light of knowledge will arise. When rajas rises, these ensue: greed, agitation, and desire. With tamas foremost, these emerge: delusion, error, lethargy. From sattva one gains higher birth, and due to rajas mundane birth, those remaining in tamas low to inferior births descend. But when this truth is recognized, these qualities do cause all acts. Knowing what is beyond the three, one attains to my state supreme. Transcending these three qualities, embodied souls are then released from pain of birth, death, and old age, attaining immortality. Arjuna said, by what marks can I recognize those who transcend these qualities? How did they rise above the three? How do they act, O Lord, tell me? The Blessed Lord said, observing with indifference, undisturbed by the qualities, knowing the three perform all acts, they remain firm, unwavering, alike in honor and disgrace, the same toward friend and enemy, abandoning all selfish deeds. They transcend the three qualities, those who serve me unceasingly through devotional practices, transcending all three qualities. In Brahman they are fit to merge. And there we have an overview of chapter 14. It's been quite a good study. It's really a wonderful. On when you look at that, Guna Traya Vibhaga, it looks so boring. And then you get into it, and you discover how wonderful that chapter is. So it's been quite a nice study. When we meet next time, we'll begin chapter 15. Some closing announcements. Oh, a number of announcements today. Tomorrow, Sunday, our Gita at Work study group will meet at 11 a.m. You're all welcome for the Gita at Work study group. At 6:15, I'll be conducting satsang. If it's nice, we'll sit outside. Good question-answer in formal format. And then our new classes for the fall are beginning. On Tuesday, our Vedanta class will resume at 7:30 p.m. This year, we'll be studying Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Don't let the name intimidate you. It's one of the most important of the Upanishads. We'll be taking selected portions. This is quite long, so we'll just take selected portions. Extremely powerful. So you're all welcome to join us on Tuesday evenings for the Vedanta class. On Wednesdays, we're starting a new beginning Sanskrit class. Many of you have expressed an interest to learn Sanskrit properly. The only way to learn is from the beginning. So we're going to start. Many of you in your school days remember Rama, Rama, Rama. Yep, come and join us. Because you don't remember any of it. If you want to learn properly, it's quite a nicely structured class. So you can join us on Wednesday evenings at 7:30 for the beginning Sanskrit class. Those of you who know some Sanskrit, we have a class starting on Thursday, Bhagavad Gita Bhashya. So many times in this class, I refer to Shankara's commentary, all in Sanskrit, of course. But in order to go through the Bhasha, you really need to have at least the basics of Sanskrit. So if you have a fairly good amount of grammar with you, then you're most welcome. Please join us for the, it'll be, by the way, what I'll be doing is for those of you who already know some grammar, I'll teach you how to read the commentary. That's really the orientation of the class. So start, given that you already have grammar, how to apply that grammar and be able to read commentary with full comprehension. That's the point of the class. So these classes begin this coming week. It's all on our website. It's also on our newsletter. I'll mention on November 1st, there's a celebration honoring Swami Satchidananda, who I knew back in the 1970s, long ago. I've been invited to the celebration. I can't attend. If any of you knew him, or if you'd like to go on my behalf, please contact me. Let me know. Library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.